Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, September 8th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, what a day, what a day, what a day it has been.
True.
Had a little bit of a recovery in gold today by a whole, 80 cents. But anyway, we'll take it. Gold down currently 13.30 at 12.56. You have silver getting a little hammered today, down 21 cents, but still over 19 at 19.09. Platinum was down $6 at 14.05, and we have palladium down $3 at $887. USDX today is trading much, much stronger, up 0.55 at 84.31. Crude oil's down 38 cents at 92.91, and the paper markets today, a little pressure on them, but, you know, nothing to, you know, get all excited about. The Dow is down 25 points at $17,111. The NASDAQ was up 10 at 45.92, and the S&P down 6 at 2001. Interesting number. And the 10-year yield only up 0.01 at 2.47%. And, you know, I mean, this isn't new news, Al. The super rich are getting super richer. The study finds that the wealthiest 3% of U.S. households controls 54% of the nation's wealth. It isn't. But they are getting wealthier and wealthier. And you know what? I mean, if people are smart enough and at the right place at the right time and they become wealthy, more power to them. What concerns me is their influence over our politics.
That's the problem. Why getting disproportionately rich. I don't mind anybody making all the money you can earn. But when you use the money you have earned in the past to bribe congressmen under the pretext of political campaign contribution laws,
we're just not
to
only
pass
talking
more laws to get you even richer. That's a problem.
Well, we're not even just talking about here in this country. We're talking about the world, the influence, and how they can influence, not only in order to get richer and richer for themselves, but how, you know, their ability to influence citizens.
Well, that's true.
Not just Washington, but the citizens. They change public opinion. They change the way people think. They're part of the problem.
And why is that happening? Why is that happening in this country? It's because the FCC laws, which used to prohibit people from owning more than one major radio outlet in a major market. Now you can buy all you want, mm-hmm. belly up to the bar. And by changing those rules, which were sensible and reasonable, as, oh, we need more freedom in this country. Well, these rules were restricting freedom, and that's true. They're restricting the freedom of the rich to buy every radio station in town. And by controlling the radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and whatever, they can control public opinion. And it's a bad thing. I have to give, I mean, the FCC laws we're talking about trace back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal, ultimately. And he's no fan of mine, and government regulation is no fan of mine, but the truth of the matter is, you can't just turn the world over to the rich because they aren't going to do anything. You know, Reagan came out with that trickle-down theory. We'll reduce taxes and give more money to the rich, and then they'll spend it, and it'll trickle down to all the great unwashed. That's a bunch of crapola. If you want to trickle, if you want to see money trickle, give it to the poor. They'll spend it as fast as it comes in the door. It's one of the reasons they are poor, because they don't save anything. They have no respect for money. Give them all the money you want, and they'll be broke within 6 months. But the rich, you give them money, it is part, one of the hallmarks of being wealthy, that you do not spend your money on frivolous things. You save and you save and you acquire and stack and stack. It is absolutely a characteristic of the rich. There isn't going to be a trickle-down policy. You give more money to the rich and they're going to keep their thanks very much. And how about giving us some more? That's their attitude.
It was more of a tinkle-down.
Yeah, I know. There's going to be a trickle down. It'll be a tinkle down. That's exactly right. And what you're getting will not be a shower of green dollar bills. You'll be getting a shower, all right, but it won't be green. It'll be the tinkle down theory. That's what you get out of it.
But you know what, Al? You know, we have all these wealthy people, and they're so young nowadays. I mean, you look at these computer guys. I mean, they're in their 20s, early 20s, you know, that hit it rich, and they're making major. They don't get it yet. They don't understand. They might understand their computers real well, but I really don't think they understand or have any enough experience in order to to establish their views.
Well, you know,
and to have such
it's easy
impact.
To have dumb ideas when you're younger.
That's my point.
Yeah, and that's typical.
And
of
that's
all
dangerous.
Of us.
But that's
there's
dangerous.
A lot of things I believed in, you know, with
because
great
what,
passion when I was a young man, and I've come to understand they were dumb ideas.
But the thing of it is, in today's world, our youth, they hold these people up with such,
It goes to, I was listening to a video last night that made an interesting argument. And the argument was that people today are not interested in accomplishment. They're not interested in achievement. They're interested in success. And there's a difference. There was a time when this country began when people wanted to build their own homes. And they wanted to build their own roads, and they wanted to build whatever. And it wasn't about just getting rich, although some of that would follow. It was about achieving something. I want to make something. And that's where they focused their minds, where today people don't care what they make. They just care how much they make. Right? I don't care if I build a building, a radio station, a road. What difference does it make? How much money did you make? If you didn't make any money, you're a failure. If you did make money, you're a success. There's a difference in attitude, and as a result, anything that can make money is deemed to be okay. That includes prostitution and drug dealing, and I don't know what else we can find out there. That is, how much are we making money on these days that would have been deemed not just unsavory, but absolutely illegal 50 years ago? This goes to changing our mindset from that of a nation, which has moral values, to that of an economy, which is all about the money. All you have in the economy is economics. The economics are all about the money. Give me more money, more money, more money. That's all. It's a dangerous transition, and we'll ultimately pay a price for that's for embracing an economic system of values and abandoning that moral system of values. It's, you know, we don't find only morality in the nation and only economics in the economy, but they tend to run that direction. There's more about all about the money primarily in the economy, more about the morals, to some degree at least, in the nation. Yeah, yeah.
Well, before we go on, we're going to be talking about Obama and his weight on immigration and his announcement that's going to come Wednesday in regards to Iraq. There was a report today that was a Harvard survey. Now, I mean, this isn't new news either, but it's a Harvard survey finds falling wages, more part-time jobs, and firms that are favoring robots over people.
Yep.
And it was an interesting survey because these were all alumni of Harvard. And there was almost 2,000. It was over 1,900 Harvard Business School graduates ranging in age from 26 to 98. And among the respondents who are working, 40% of them had a title of chief executive or its equivalent. So, I mean, these are fairly... Well, they know which direction this country is going in reference to jobs. So I wouldn't expect any type of a meaningful raises was the message from this survey.
Mm-hmm.
And more than 40% of the respondents foresee lower pay and benefits for workers. 49% favor outsourcing work over hiring staffers, which I thought was an interesting number. A growing share prefer part-time employees. That's nothing to, you know, it's something we didn't already know. And here's an interesting percent. 46% would rather invest in new technology than hire or retain workers.
And when you say invest, you're not merely talking about, you're not talking about investing in the stock market. You're talking about installing new technology in your business that would essentially replace some of the people you already employ.
Absolutely. We were talking about fast food employment, and Panera Bread has already invested millions and millions of dollars in new technology to replace those workers in fast food. So, again, you're seeing this you're finding it everywhere. It's harder for the executives to find. And then on the other hand, it's harder for them to find skilled workers, according to this survey.
That's their excuse.
Perhaps.
That's their excuse. But I saw Bill Gates.
I'm not so sure. You know what, Al? Look, you know, we talk at our education. So is it really that hard to figure that perhaps we don't have the skilled workers anymore?
Well, this is one of these things.
I mean, their careers are
fast. The chicken or the egg. When they sent industries overseas,
mm-hmm.
we used to have an industrial base of people who knew. They knew from their father and their grandfather. Father and grandfather used to work on the General Motors assembly line, right? The kid comes in, he knows things from his family. He's already been educated to some degree on how to work on the assembly line. He's heard about it all his life. Once you ship those industries overseas, you lose that educational base. It's not just a question of schools. We're also educated by our parents who are working in the foundries, working in the factories. Move the foundries and factories overseas. We don't get that education. We are no longer equipped. We say, oh my gosh, I don't want to work in a place with all that molten steel. Well, there are losses that are being, what I'm trying to get to is, have we lost the skilled workers because they no longer have sufficient education? Or do they no longer have sufficient education because we've sent a lot of those jobs overseas? You know, what's the cause and what's the effect on this thing? And it may be circular. It may not be just a cause or an effect, but it's peculiar, it's strange, it's complex, and it's dangerous. Because ultimately, you listed some of the values or some of the opinions of these Harvard CEOs. They're talking about outsourcing. This is consistent with what I was saying. They don't give a damn about the nation.
No.
They give a damn about how much money they make. And it doesn't matter to them if they can make more money by having communists. They can have ISIS. If they can get ISIS to do work for less money than they have to pay, then they'll work with ISIS. There's no patriotism with these people. This is only about the money. That's where their mindset is. And the same thing applies with the robots or the advanced technology. You can't get away from these things. I know that there's, how are you going to resist advancing technology? If you don't absorb it, your costs are going to be higher than your competitors. You're going to go out of business. Now, that's a fact. But if you do absorb it, who's going to buy your product? I mean, when we get everything automated in this country where nobody has to work, who's going to have any money to buy anything? We are facing all of these problems, our technological and value problems, you know, whether we're going to be patriotic or we're just going to chase the almighty dollar. All of these things are happening, and none of them bode well. What are we going to do with people who can't get a job?
Put them on Obamacare.
I understand, but who's going to pay that?
Hey, when you look at the baby boomers, I mean, hey, you know, there's a large percentage of baby boomers. You get rid of, you have a little pandemic, and you eliminate the population. It really is as simple as...
Well, you're a baby boomer, aren't you?
Yes, I is.
Mm-hmm. Well, be careful what you wish for, you know? You know, wind up...
No, I don't wish for it.
I'm just
a fact.
I agree with you. And I'm just saying these are terrible demographic problems, and they will not be resolved painlessly. You know, I've seen some of the reports where they anticipate we're going to see more income inequality, where 10% of the people are going to be rich in this country and the other 90% are going to just barely survive. Some people suggest that's possible, and I look at it and I say this is not outside the realm of possibility. What are most of us going to do? How many of us can program computers? And even those of you who can program computers, how long before they have computers that program computers? I mean, how many jobs are safe right now? Plumbers, fixing pipes, carpenters, electricians. You know, the kind of work, blue-collar work may be. The first tier may be the wheelers, dealers, and the people who inherit all their money. And the second tier, the people who actually have little money, they might not be super rich, but they get by, may be technicians, home mechanics, you know, people who can fix your plumbing and your whatever. That kind of service work, they may do well. And what about what's left? What's left after that? And who's going to pay? There is a kind of relationship that goes on in economics where you can't play the game. It's like Monopoly. When one of you finally wins all the money on the board, the game is over. And the same thing is true here. When one of us finally wins all the money on the board, nobody else can play. The game is over. When 10% have all the money and the other 90% have nothing, what happens then? The game is over. So we're facing some very strange and interesting times.
And you know, everyone, part of this survey also mentions about the better stock prices, how stock gains have been fueled in part by solid profits, and that's what it's all about, just as you had mentioned.
Yeah.
And the one comment from this person that was involved in the survey, he says the ship is sinking more slowly. So they were able to plug it a little bit, but man, the ship is still sinking.
Yeah.
And so when you see big changes like the stocks making these all-time highs, and even gold with the pressure that we've seen on gold of late, the fundamentals haven't changed.
No.
And this was a prime example of how our future really holds. So when you're investing, you don't just invest for today and see what's up and what's down today. You should be investing for the future. Because
well, that's the whole idea. That's the difference between investing and speculation. Speculation is just gambling over the course of the next, who knows, high-frequency trading is all about gambling. It's about speculation. What will the price of the stock be a fraction of a second from now. If you can make a fraction of a penny with these high frequency, it's gambling, it's speculation, but it's working. People are making big bucks, but not ordinary people. We'll talk more about that when we return. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
Yes.
Melody.
Well, I just wanted to tell the listeners that from Friday's program with David Krieger, I put in an outline. A part of the program, not the whole program, but a part of the program, and you can find that in the newsletter today, and you can go to our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and just sign up for our newsletter, or if you want to just send me an email, we can go ahead and get that sent over to you also. And my email, you can use questions@dgscoins.com. So make sure you sign up for that. It was a great discussion on Friday, had lots of comments. We sold $20 gold pieces, which is how it should be. People have added to their portfolios and certainly have diversified, And we do have Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces today for $1,500. That includes your shipping costs. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. These are Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold pieces, dated prior and up including 1907. So make sure you give us a call. Add some to your portfolio if you do not have them. They're a great buy at that price.
What's next, Melody?
I believe we have a caller.
Anybody we know?
I don't know. Oh, I recognize that voice.
Well, Jim, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good for crazy person. There's a funny echo on the line. Wanted to make a few comments about education. In 1965, my parents told me the truth about the Federal Reserve counterfeiting operations, false flag operations, the corporate nature of governments. Corporations replaced most of our governments. And also they explained, my dad was a patent agent. He explained the difference between common law and administrative law and equity law. And I didn't understand a lot of it. I didn't like it, to be honest with you. And maritime admiralty law. Just made me read some Blackstone. Made me read a stack of history. Well, okay. So I learned firsthand how much the schools lied about everything, economics and history. It also made me read Adam Smith. I think they wanted to torture me, to be honest with you. But then 1969 rolls around. Now, I tested pretty good. I'll just leave it at that. And my parents, academics above everything. We didn't have a TV, for instance. Fast wasteland. Grew up in a small library. 1969, I'm taking calculus at WVU for a semester. I'm having an awful time with it. And Dad said, bring me your book. And that normally meant he was going to chew me out because I was an idiot. Just he looked at and said, my God, trying to dumb down math. How do you dumb down math? Are they dumbing down math? Big old thick, heavy book. So he digs around and pulls out his 1930s calculus book. He says, here, kid, try that on for size. It was about half the size, boy, about a fourth of the weight of his book, but it made perfectly good sense. A couple of years later, he said, they're deindustrializing America. That's what's going on. They're getting rid of the technical end. They're deindustrializing. He was right.
Yeah.
I had an instructor from electrical engineering. Most of them were instructors. They weren't professors. Not a long, long time ago, but things ain't gotten no better since then. He wasn't a professor. Most of them were guys going for their fellowships. And said, I work at the very good store off the world's second beauty station. I work at a music store in town.
Breaking up, Jim.
Uh-oh. Shall I call Ken?
Can you hear me now? Up, I don't know if I... we can and we can't. It garbles. It comes in and out, but you're doing well for most of what you've said up until now. In the last 60 seconds or so, it started to become garbled, at least for me. I don't know if it's the
Let
way it's
back.
Going out to the
it
audience.
It is. That's how it's going out.
Let me call back.
Give us a. All right, Jim, go ahead. Try calling back and see if we can get a better line. We'll watch and see what happens. And
well, we certainly have seen the textbooks over the years change, and usually the textbooks from the earlier days from years ago seem to be easier for students to learn. I've been told.
He's making a good point. Maybe if you want to learn calculus,
you need to go back to the.
Maybe you need a 1930s text.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Maybe even earlier than that. You know, one of the things I learned over the years, I'm a student of the law, and I ran for the Supreme Court of Texas in 1992 here in Texas. Now it's supposed to be illegal, but I found a law that said it was all right, so I got on the ballot and got 201,000 votes. I've been a student of the law for a long time, but I read it for years, about 17 years, before I realized why it was so hard to understand. And the reason was that the people at the Supreme Court, I'd read Supreme Court law, case law mostly, and the people at the Supreme Court since 1930s, they have been intentionally concealing the law. That's why some of the law that you can read prior to the 1930s is almost exquisite in its clarity and how well they communicate. They wanted people to understand. But since the New Deal, they don't want people to understand. And so they are concealing things. You have to learn to read the white on the page as well as the black. And once you realize that they're trying to conceal things in the law, then the law became very easy for me. But it took me 17 years of reading the law, and it was like trying to chew through a bale of hay. Huh? And all of a sudden, oh, they're trying to conceal things. Once I got that, then you learn to look for whatever is being concealed. And it's not that hard to find if you know what you're looking for, if you're aware. It's like Easter eggs. You know, if you know they're out there in the lawn someplace, you can find them. If you don't know the Easter eggs are out on the lawn, then chances are you're not going to find them. Huh? Well, it's the same thing. Jim is back. Jim, are you there?
Oh, yeah. I have learned how to read autophagy from the 1946 DeVrac course of Health and Neighborhood gave me. It's actually very simple if you learn it right. But I had an instructor, an arrogant booger, who tore up his beautiful Marantz stereo. And he had transistors in backwards. He wrecked the thing totally, and it was very expensive to repair. He did not know I worked at the stereo components in a store in Morgantown. So he came in to get his rig, and he had asked that he speak to the technician over the bill. I popped my little head out of the back room. He turned two colors and ran off. But seriously, the education at that time was horrible. Now, I got kicked out of electrical engineering my last semester because I said Jesus Christ the right way one too many times after I got saved. And I had an instructor who warned me, you keep opening your mouth like that, you're not going to get out of engineering school. I didn't believe him. Well, I did. Very dirty trick that kicked me out. But long story behind that, you don't want to hear it. Here's what blows my mind. I bumped into new electrical engineers, and I spent my entire life living and breathing electronics design. I've designed hundreds of circuits and repair and calibration, you name it. I have run into new young electrical engineers and young engineers in general who cannot design without AutoCAD, like kids who cannot do math without a calculator.
I know.
I ran into one who couldn't seem to understand what was going on with an oscilloscope and didn't seem to know what they were looking at, a full-blown electrical engineer. So when we have engineers coming from India, they normally know what's going on because, see, electronics and mechanical drawings and math, those are universal languages. It doesn't matter. I mean,
and they're
math
not,
is math.
They're not necessarily new. They're always new innovations and the rest of it. But mathematics has been around for a long time, and the fundamentals of teaching it effectively should be pretty well established.
Well, this much I know. The technical education started stinking 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was rather shocked because supposedly WVU has supposedly the top 10 electrical engineering programs in the nation. Another lie. But
so
I
what
have
does
been shocked.
Do? What does it indicate? If this problem has been here for 40 years, what does it indicate?
It indicates that the college has been corrupted by New World Order grants.
Yeah, and it's not just the college. It's part and parcel of a systemic attempt to destroy this country. Right?
Well,
and they
understand
that you go after values and you go after education. The average person thinks if you want to destroy this country, you need to launch some intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Uh-uh.
But people who are knowledgeable understand you can destroy, you can achieve much the same effect by simply changing the education system and changing the system of values and feeding people false information about what the unemployment rate, the inflation rate is, and so on out of the economics. It can be done without physical violence.
I got another one for you. Fast forward to year 2000. I had to homeschool my kids for about a year after a divorce, and they went with mom, and both were flung after about a year or so. So I went to my ninth graders' teachers just to find out if there are other issues involved, just to find out what's going on. Ninth teacher, Jim, you're not going to believe this. He said, but I have to stop teaching science for a week. Teaching the math, the advanced math kids, so they can do the science. What do you make of that? And I looked at him and said, it sounds to me like you're trying to dumb down the smartest the most. He said, bingo. He says, I think that's in every advanced class that they have here. And it's supposedly one of the best junior high schools in the state.
So what's the solution?
The solution is very simple. If you know somebody has to do something, follow them around and learn from them. I spent a summer around a fellow who was a master welder off and on. He was the dad of my best friend's girlfriend. But he used to work on stuff at his house, and boy, did I learn a lot from him just watching him. He was an artist with a torch. But if you find somebody like a master gardener, follow them around.
Well, here's another point to it. It also suggests that if you're at all possible, try to stay away from public school education.
Absolutely.
It's a difficult situation for a lot of people, but we see it again and again that kids that are homeschooled, they do much better than the kids that are going to public school education. And if you've got any opportunity to homeschool your own children, at least you will try to educate them.
I think the difference, though, Al, between the two, and I'm not disagreeing with you. However, when you have someone that's homeschooled, guess what? Parents are involved in their education.
Yeah.
When you have kids going to public school, you've got two parents that are working that can barely make ends meet. You know, they get into the system, and you know, the parents have been relying on the schools to educate their children. You know, they're told how smart their kids are. They're not told that the grading system is being dropped lower and lower and lower. I mean, I can remember some kids in the family, we were told how smart, that you give them a computer, they can do anything. They can hook up your computer. Hello, it's color coordinated. All you have to do is match the colors up and plug it in. Anybody can do that. But if you ask them to write a business letter, they can't do it. And to me, I think that's, that's part of the parents. Parents need to, even though they're in public school, they need to take an active part in exactly what your children are learning.
Well, part of the reason the parents don't is the parents themselves are public school graduates, and it's not as if the public schools have deteriorated in the last couple of years. This has been going on for several generations, and the parents were not properly educated where they can provide an education to the next generation.
Point.
They don't know anything other than how to turn on Dancing with the Stars. What are they going to teach their kids? Put the red one in the red, and that's the two red ones, and yellow to yellow, and so on and so forth. That's all they know.
So then, but you're also telling me then not everybody can homeschool their children then.
Well,
homeschool your children doesn't apply.
Well, it applies pretty well for the early grades, and as you get later and later, maybe it applies less and less, but it depends on the parents. Some people are too ignorant to teach their own children. Many are not. And one of the things I've learned over the years is I always learn more by teaching other people than I learn by being taught.
That's
true. If you're in a position where you can teach a class, it is a profound education because it will at least teach you how to communicate your ideas to the class. And the class will say, well, I don't understand this. And you'll realize, I just glossed over that. I made a presumption that they understood something, and I proceeded from there. But one of the students said, I don't get this. And then you say, yeah, you're right. My presentation wasn't correct. But you learn by teaching, and what I'm trying to communicate is this. Homeschoolers are not merely educated by their parents. Parents are perhaps educated by their homeschooled children.
Well, that may be the case, but it's a problem that's difficult to, address. You just can't lump everybody.
Well, I know. There's no easy solution, but the big problem is not how many of us are dumb and how many of us are intelligent. The big problem is how many of us are devoted to the destruction of this nation. We can deal with the dummies. We can deal with the super intelligent. We can't deal with people who are bound and determined to tear this nation down, and that's the problem. Our government is dominated by a bunch of people who are in favor of a new world order and one world governments, and it can't happen unless the United States of America ceases to exist. It's the reason why they shipped our industries overseas. It's the reason why they are encouraging an invasion of illegal aliens. They want this nation destroyed, and it has to be stopped. If it's not going to be stopped, and if we won't understand it for what it is, treason, and not a little bit, not by handful, but institutionalized treason, if we can't understand it and deal with it for what it is, then the nation is in great peril.
Well, it has been in great peril. But speaking of immigration, you have Obama. He's waiting on the to make his move on immigration until after the election. So he just recently reversed his course this past weekend. And he was going to, if you remember correctly, he was going to do whatever it took, whatever executive action he had to make on immigration reform, he was going to do it. But now because the election is coming and, you know, things are getting heated up and perhaps the Democrats are not in the position as they think they should be against the Republican, he decided to wait until after the election.
You know, and this is just another illustration of the kind of problem we have in this country with values.
Exactly.
He's just saying, I can't get away with it right now. I know it's wrong. I know the American people won't go for it. But I also know they have a relatively short attention span. So we won't do it in front of this election. But as soon as we get the election done, then we'll do it.
Then we'll.
And it'll make them angry. It'll be contrary to what the American people want. But screw them. All right? We're going to do what Obama wants and maybe what the Democrats want and certainly what the illegal aliens want. We're going to serve the illegals at the expense of the people that are here legally. Sounds like Frank is complaining that we have talked too long, Melody. I can hear him playing the piano
yes,
in the background.
Yes, you did. Yes, you have.
Uh-huh. Well, we got to stop and take a break. More commercial announcements. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Prices are down. Everybody knows it. And a lot of people are concerned about that. But you know what? The point is that fundamentals indicate that these are temporary downs. It can't stay down forever. And what this is finally about is not about the value of gold, per se. It's about the value of the fiat dollar.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The reason I invest in gold is not because it's yellow or it's shiny. All right?
Really?
That's irrelevant to me. I don't care about that. The reason I invest is because it is a profound alternative to the fiat dollar, which is made out of paper or mere digits on a hard drive. Everything I see tells me those paper dollars are going to go up in smoke. I just can't tell you exactly when. But everybody you read anticipates that the problem could be almost at any moment. It might be next year. I don't know when it's going to happen. It might be before the end of this year. I don't know when it's going to happen. Neither does anyone else. But you can see it. I mean, it's going to be, it will take almost divine intervention to preserve the dollar indefinitely. This thing's going to go up in smoke. Maybe next month, maybe a year from now. I don't know when it's going up there, but it's going, it's sensible. You look at it and you say, this thing's going to go up in smoke. What do I want to do in the meantime? It hasn't set fire yet, but it's going to happen. It's got to happen. It's always happened with fiat currencies. It's bound to happen with this one again. When it happens, what do I want to own? Where do I want to store my wealth? Do I want to store it in paper, in digits, in paper stock certificates, in bonds denominated in U.S. dollars? Where do I want to store my wealth? And the answer for me inevitably comes out, I think gold's a good idea. I think silver's a good idea. Right? It's not because I worship gold. It's not because I worship silver. I don't. But I absolutely look at those paper dollars and say, let me out of here. This is a burning building. You understand? It may be that it's only a little fire over in the corner right now, but this burned building, this is going to go up in smoke, and I'm going to try not to be in the building when that happens. So
you're in a dynamite factory building.
Yeah, that's
right?
What it comes down to. Yeah, and that's not a bad that's not a bad metaphor, because when this thing does go, it's going to be explosive. They're going to be. Worst case scenario, there are going to be casualties, not just inconvenience. We're not just talking about if the dollar dies, what happens? It's not just long lines at the gas station. It's gunfire. All right? You know, the government recently purchased 2 billion rounds of ammunition. They ordered 2 billion rounds of ammunition in the last year, 18 months. It's for domestic consumption. It's not to shoot at the Muslim terrorists. It's to be shot at the American people. They are anticipating. The government is anticipating a catastrophe. It might not happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it is at least a plausible possibility. And it's not just people like me that say, oh, doom and gloom, yeah, yeah. What did the government buy 2 billion rounds of ammunition? That's 7 rounds almost. You know, that's 6-7 rounds for every man, woman, and child in this country. They are anticipating trouble in the same sense I am anticipating trouble. And if you agree with those expectations, anticipations, not just me, but from the government, what are you going to do? If you're smart, in my opinion, take advantage of low prices and for gold and get some while you can. What's next, Melody?
Well, we have yesterday, I guess Obama met on Meet the Press, and he's preparing the country to make sure we deal with the threat from ISIL, ISIL. I guess he smokes to make some sort of an announcement Wednesday, I believe.
I've got an article here from the New York Times. Destroying ISIS may take years. Obama said maybe Friday, I don't know, over the weekend, I'm not sure. He said he's prepared to do anything. He's going to destroy ISIS. All right, but now we get one. New York Times, destroying ISIS may take years, U.S. officials say. It may take 3 years to complete. Required sustained effort that could last until after President Obama has left office. The first phase, an air campaign, with nearly 145 airstrikes in the past month, is already underway to protect ethnic and religious minorities and American diplomatic, intelligence, and military personnel and their facilities, as well as to begin rolling back ISIS gains. This is, we're doing it to protect. That's why we're bombing people in Iraq again. Again, we are back there. The second phase, which would begin sometime after Iraq forms a more inclusive government, scheduled this week. Oh, bunk. The second phase after Iraq, they mean they're going to unite the Sunnis and the Shia are going to somehow be united in a government in Iraq. That isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen unless they can resurrect Saddam Hussein and he can keep everybody in line with the hard fist of a dictator. It's not going to happen, at least not until donkeys fly. We can barely get Democrats and Republicans to sit in the same room in this country. And how are you going to get Shiites and Sunnis to work together in Iraq? The division within Iraq is not political. It's spiritual. It's religious. The easiest way to make the Sunnis and Shiites work together is to convert them all to Judaism. Why don't you try that? It makes better sense than supposing you're going to get the Shiites and the Sunnis to work together in Iraq. It's not happening. They will become more and more at each other's throats. They've been at each other's throats for, what is it, since 600 A.D., all right? 15 centuries they've been harassing each other, and it's not going to end. We are not going to make that stop. And here it goes on. The article says, but all of this, the second phase, is expected to involve an intensified effort to train, advise, or equip the Iraqi military. Haven't we done that already? Isn't that what we did? We trained, equipped, and supplied the Iraqi military before we left in 2011. Didn't we train them already? But now we got to train them again. And we've got to train Kurdish fighters and possibly members of Sunni tribes. All right? We've been training the Shia in Iraq, fighting against the Sunni who were controlling under Saddam Hussein. But now we may, in addition to training the Shia in Iraq, we may also train some of the Sunnis. Okay? Wonderful idea. But isn't training Sunni warriors in Syria what got us into the new mess in Iraq? If we train more Sunnis in Iraq, won't that cause even more problems and perhaps extend ISIS moves into Iran? I mean, when do you wake up and say, you know, you can't just keep giving these people guns and expect them to reach some sort of a peace agreement? You can't train them how to fight and be surprised if they engage in war. The third and final, toughest and most politically controversial phase of the operation intended to stop ISIS, ISIL, IS, and Islamic State, destroying the terrorist army in its sanctuary inside Syria. And this might not be completed until the next administration. Now, why is this so tough? Okay, we were using the Syrians, we were using ISIS within Syria to destroy the president of Syria, Assad. And now we say, no, we've got to attack the people that we created in Syria in order to preserve Iraq. You listen to this, you read it, and you say, my God, these people are out of their effing minds, or war is not something that they object to. The truth of the matter may simply be they want war, and they're going about it just exactly the right way to keep the war going. And now, will we ever leave Iraq, except maybe for a couple of years here and there? We'll be gone for a couple of years. Flames will start up, another war. The Americans will be dragged in again. I don't know how much it'll cost us. And in the meantime, we don't have enough money to protect our own borders, you know? But boy, we got the money to go fight for Iraqis. This whole thing is nuts. The people responsible for it ought to be thrown out of office and tried for treason.
Well, you know, Al, my question is, what's the big picture here? What is it that they're really after? What are they trying to accomplish? Because we all know they're trained. They just don't go to war on their own. They're financed. The money is coming from somewhere. We already said that a lot of the money came from the CIA. So what is the big picture here? Yeah, let them fight. You know, you can call it a religious and spiritual battle or whatever. What is the big picture? Where is this being molded, and what is it being molded into? Where is it? What is it?
I've seen one report that I thought was interesting, that war always generates inflation. And I know our government wants inflation in order to get out from the national debt.
Yeah, but the Iraq war was just played. It wasn't even put on the books.
Regardless, the argument is this.
It would create
some I'm offering a possibility. I'm not telling you God's truth. I'm just saying it may be that they want inflation. And they understand that they can't stand deflation. Deflation makes the national debt bigger. Government's the biggest debtor in the world. They don't want deflation because it will cause the debt, the purchasing power of the debt, to increase. They want inflation. If they could get 50% inflation or 100% inflation, it would cut the size of the national debt by 50%. We'd still owe $17 trillion, but we'd only have to pay back the purchasing power of about $8 trillion.
But I don't think this is the war that would do that.
I don't know.
I don't see it creating inflation. It might
be the war that would contribute to it.
Yeah, but it wouldn't do enough in order to do it. Would it be the beginning of something bigger between Iran and Israel? I don't know. But there's a bigger picture here, and I haven't figured it out yet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're going to say oil. You can say inflation. You can say, heck, we're making agreements with Iran now. I mean, hey, come on, help us.
Yeah,
help
we
us
were ready
Iraq.
To bomb Iran. Yeah. All right? And now we're going to play nice in order to try to control ISIS for a while.
So I haven't seen, and I haven't read, and I haven't come to the conclusion of what this is really about. Or is this just something that kind of got out of hand? Which I don't think so. Not when if you believe that so many things are controlled.
Hand. I don't think it's being handled well. But I think there are people in positions of power who are determined to have their way, and they have a vision of the world that they want to impose on everyone else. One of the things I've been meaning to do, Zygmunt Brzezinski. Turns out that Obama is one of Brzezinski's proteges, which is something that I wasn't aware of. Probably maybe everybody else understood that. I did not. Insofar as that's true, if we want to know what Obama's doing, maybe we need to read some of Brzezinski's books or articles. He wants done, because there's a real good chance that's what Obama is attempting to accomplish.
Because the thing of it is, when ISIS started into Iraq, they probably could have shut them down right then and there. But we also know, which no one talks about, are the number of Christians that are being slaughtered.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is this, you know, maybe this is a different type. You know, we talk about the Sunnis and the Shiites, their spiritual battle and so forth. But what about the battle against Christians?
I think it's secondary right
country.
Now. I think it's secondary right
and
now.
And when you
I
look at
they...
our president, when you look at to Washington, and, you know, people have their beliefs that, you know, is he really a Christian or is he not? My personal belief is no. So does he even really care that Christians are being slaughtered?
No.
Does he really care that American journalists are getting beheaded? It doesn't seem that way.
I think he cares about the public opinion, but I think the most important thing, I mean, the Sunnis and the Shiites have been at each other's throats for 15 centuries. Not all the time, but some of the time. They keep fighting back and forth.
I don't care about them. I care about the Christians.
Well, I think maybe the government is just bound and determined to turn the Middle East into chaos. I'm not sure that the Sunnis and the Shiites would really be fighting against each other as badly as they are right now, except for the fact that they are being encouraged and stimulated to do it. And in the end, they're killing each other. Some of us are being killed along the way. But the Sunnis and the Shiites may be the big victims of this before it's all done. We're all done. We're done. We're out of time today. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer and piano player. Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. Bless you back.